Welcome, friends. Welcome back to ArtCast. Hey, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, bringing you more architecture insight and commentary from experts around the world. And today, we have, well, a guy who's really smart and a guy who definitely can endure a lot of education because he has a ton of it. And he knows his business. He's been in the manufacturing business for a long time, working with supply chains and manufacturers to get them efficient. And man, that is the name of the game in manufacturing. I mean, if you can shave a half of a cent off the cost of one thing, but you make millions of them, it's just huge. And that's what these guys do. They think relentlessly about efficiency. So let's give it up for Atanu Banerjee. Well, this is Ron Jacobs, and I am joined today by one of my colleagues here on the Architecture Strategy Team, Atanu. Did I say that right, Atanu?
You said it perfectly, Ron.
Oh, I like that. I'm so glad. Well, okay, but I'm not going to try your last name. Say your full name for me.
Yeah, I'm Atanu Banerjee.
Well, that's not too hard, Banerjee.
No, that's you said right again. You're getting good at these names.
Okay, well, you know, I really ought to get this down because you're like right across the hall from me. But anyway, we want to talk today about what you're doing. So you're part of the Industry Solutions Architecture team here, and you're working specifically in manufacturing. Now, tell me a little bit about your background. I mean, how did you get involved in manufacturing?
Well, Ron, I've been in this space for a while now, for like almost 10 years. Prior to joining Microsoft, I was at a company called I2 Technologies, which provided supply chain solutions to manufacturing customers, mostly discrete manufacturers. And I was there for about 7.5 years. And before that, I was at a company called Aspen Technology, which did process side of things like refineries and things like that. And we used to provide software solutions for them. And so I've seen problems that manufacturers face across a wide variety of industry types, both process and discrete.
And you spent a lot of time in school, too.
Yes, I did. And I actually have a PhD to show for it, a PhD from Georgia Tech. Go Yellow Jackets.
Yeah. So you're way more patient than I am, because if you could endure that much schooling, yeah, you're doing good. but that's good, you know, because you've got a lot of industry expertise that you're bringing. And so you came to Microsoft. And now the world is your oyster. What are you doing? What are you doing here?
So we work. So my team works with customers in the industry, and I specifically work with manufacturing customers. And so these are customers that basically make things. They source goods and components from suppliers. They make it. They add value in a particular way through production. And then they sell their goods through distribution channels. So these could be retailers or shops or through other means. But that's what I focus on, the steps that transform raw materials to finished goods that go for sale.
Okay, so for a lot of people who are listening to this program, they probably, you know, we all have a general idea of what manufacturers do. But I think what we don't know is what are the particular challenges that they face. I mean, What are the hard things about manufacturing? It seems like the industry has been in a lot of flux lately.
Well, manufacturers today, they do face the same challenges that they have for decades, if not centuries. They face changes in technology. They face government regulations. They face customer demands, regulation, all of these things. But the pressures have been intensifying over the last couple of decades. I mean, think about the pace of change of technology itself. I mean, whole industries are going obsolete over the span of a few years, if not a decade or so. And the government regulation like Sarbanes-Oxley or even retailer mandates like Walmart's RFID mandate, these are throwing a lot of new requirements that manufacturers didn't have to think about before. And now that forces them to think about how their systems are set up to respond to that change. In terms of globalization, that leads to global markets because now you need to go and you need to sell to customers that maybe are outside your comfort zone. You need to have to understand how these different other markets react and respond to your products and your services. Then you have to compete with a whole new host of providers who are perhaps coming out of a different geography. And so all these different things are making it a lot harder for manufacturers today than before.
Well, when I think about the dramatic change in manufacturing, you know, a lot of Western economies have seen a loss of manufacturing jobs and companies as the globalization has kind of taken hold and we've seen jobs go overseas. But I was surprised to read that China actually lost more manufacturing jobs than anybody in the last decade, when it seems like almost everything is made in China. But the trend is really not just one of globalization, but of increased productivity in the manufacturing process through better leverage of technology. So it seems to me like these manufacturers are in a race. Either you will take advantage of technology to the maximum extent, drive relentless efficiency in your manufacturing process, or your competitor will.
And that's exactly right, Ron. Let's think about something here. Let's say you were born 300 or 400 years ago, and let's say you were born in Europe, which is where a lot of things are happening at that time, and you needed a pair of shoes. What would you do? You'd go to the cobbler and you say, "Hey, I need a pair of shoes," and he'd measure your foot, and he'd make it for you. So supply was matched exactly with demand. And then a lot of things changed. We had the Industrial Revolution. Henry Ford came up with mass production of cars. And then we then had the capability and the ability to build things out in a grand scale, in a really large scale. And so manufacturers lost that need for efficiency. They could just build a lot of things and put it out in the marketplace. And even a few decades ago, if you put it out, people would generally buy it. There were ready markets for most of the stuff that people put out. But now, as these pressures are intensifying, globalization and all this other stuff, you now are forced to compete in markets that you didn't have to before, and with a whole set of new competitors that you didn't have to before. And so you can't afford any inefficiency in that process. In the process of taking customer demand and converting it as supply that you put back into the market. And so anything that a manufacturer can do to root out inefficiency is going to help it better survive that race. And so technology plays a critical part in that process. If you can outsource some part of your production to China and lower your costs, that's great. However, if you find that you can pull some stuff back home and you can use technology to do a better job of automating some of that manufacturing, you may find that you actually do save some more money. And so there's this race between outsourcing, between automation, between better use of technology, between moving production closer to where your markets are, that are making manufacturers rethink everything that they do.
Yeah, you know, and it's all about really good information to make these kind of decisions. You know, if you're trying to assess, well, could I make these widgets that I'm building, you know, closer to my market, or should I make them in China and ship them over there, you'd have to have really good information about the cost, what the costs are in building them in each place, what the cost of logistics would be. And to make those kind of decisions is really crucial to have the right information. So I think it's pretty obvious that it's a difficult marketplace. And well, I need to mention one other factor is that retailers are demanding more and more from the manufacturers than they ever did before, right? So, you know, in the old days, you know, a retailer would have a warehouse full of stuff, and they would just kind of work off of that. But now it's like I was reading about Walmart's legendary supply chain, which is very, very lean and ruthlessly efficient, and how Walmart actually kind of pioneered the practice of sharing a lot of information with the manufacturers, to the point where when I go into a Walmart store and pick something off the shelf and buy it, it might even be as real time as that the manufacturer knows that I just bought the thing they built very shortly after I bought it, so they can get the replacement on the way.
So just to take the Walmart example, my understanding on this is that Walmart knows centrally within an hour or a couple of hours whenever you make a purchase in a store. So let's say you went into a Walmart store here in Redmond or in the Seattle area, and you bought something off one of their shelves. corporate Walmart ID systems back in Bentonville will know about that purchase within a couple of hours. And then think of what that information can do. With better information, you can make better decisions. Now, if Walmart surfaces that information back to the manufacturer, then suddenly the manufacturer can get a better idea of what the customer, the real customer buying patterns are, and he can use that to update his forecasts and then change his production plans accordingly. Now, why is that important? It's important because this basically leads to better forecast accuracy for manufacturers. A study by AMR Research showed that even a 5% improvement in forecast accuracy could lead to a 10% improvement in the number of perfect orders that you have, which is basically the right product delivered to the right place at the right time. And that even and what this would lead to would be a 50-cent improvement in earnings per share, a 5% improvement in returns on assets, and a 3.3% improvement in margins. Now, as a manufacturer, your mileage may vary, but clearly the financial rewards of getting better information and earlier information are huge.
You know, it's interesting that Walmart also was one of the pioneers with the practice of sharing information with the manufacturers early in the process. In the history of this, most retailers kind of looked at their manufacturers in an almost adversarial relationship because they were trying to drive the best price they could get out of the manufacturers, you know. So they didn't want to say everything. And Walmart kind of treated them more like partners in the whole business. And, I think, you know, the way this shows itself is that you go into some stores and you see the clearance sale, right? In fact, I just took advantage of one of these at a retailer that was great. I mean, came in and they had tons of stuff on these clearance racks where they had slashed the prices to a fraction of what the retail price was. This is a big lose for the retailer, right? I mean, the retailer probably hates it. I don't know what the – maybe the manufacturer takes a hit on that as well. I don't know. But it's kind of a guessing game, isn't it, for a manufacturer? They're going to produce something – they're sort of guessing that the market will like it or not. If the market doesn't like it, it ends up on clearance racks and everybody loses. If the market likes it a lot, maybe it sells out and then the shelves are empty and the retailer doesn't like that either. So it has to be getting better information about what the market likes or doesn't like, what's selling is not selling earlier is really, really critical.
Yes, it's all about getting the right data about what the real customer and what is doing. And so what the manufacturer and the retailer and the suppliers down the supply chain are looking at is how to reduce the lead time that it takes to get goods through the supply chain, and also to reduce the variability in the data that they have.
Okay, so we've been talking a little bit kind of about the landscape and the challenges of manufacturing and how manufacturers deal with retail and whatnot. So I would guess that in this industry, the people who are winning are those who are thinking pretty hard about technology, how they can leverage it better, how they can get better information. What are you doing to kind of help them make those decisions?
Okay, so think about a typical manufacturer. What they would have done is they would have invested in a bunch of packaged softwares for ERP, for supply chain management, for CRM, and they made a lot of these investments, and now they need to kind of get more value out of these applications, to use technology to kind of extend what they have and try to get more value. And what they typically do is they go through a kind of set of maturity stages where they first start looking, where they first deal with internally focused practices, and they look at things that they're doing within departments or within silos, and then they start focusing more on cross-functional business processes. And from there, they start extending these processes to beyond the organizational boundaries, and they start looking at partners, suppliers, customers. And finally, they get to a point where they're actually collaborating and orchestrating and optimizing what they do in the business processes across an entire value chain that can cross between a retailer, a manufacturer, and then multiple levels of suppliers. Now, as they move down this maturity model, as they go through this roadmap, they find that they need to leverage different kinds of technologies. So initially they might start off with, how do I integrate my different applications? And then they'll have to start thinking about, okay, is that real time? Is that bulk data? And then they can look at technologies that Microsoft provides, like SQL Server integration services for that, BizTalk for messaging. And then they say, okay, now that we have these applications integrated, we need to report against these. We have new cross-functional processes that we weren't looking at before. How do I get data? How do I see what's going on? How do I get better visibility into these new cross-functional processes? And they start implementing reporting solutions to do that. And then once they have better data, they need to analyze what they have. And so they start looking at analytics and business intelligence, and they start throwing up dashboards. And when they start putting up dashboards, they need to collaborate between these different groups. And so they start looking at portal technologies. And here now they're surfacing the information that they're getting across the company into single places. And these portals would be personalized for the different roles of the users that need to look at this data. So an executive might get one kind of view, whereas a business analyst might get another kind of view entirely. And a product line manager may see things that he's more interested in. And so once they've got the reporting in place and the analytics in place, they're basically in a position to take advantage of all this data and to convert this information into something actionable. And then they start investing in orchestration technologies and workflow and business process management tools that allow them to match up their business processes and their actions to the insight that they have gained through the reporting and analysis tools.
Now, it seems to me that a lot of these companies probably invested in substantial monolithic kind of applications, like you mentioned, ERP and supply chain management, in the maybe late 90s or early 2000s. You know, they spent money and built those systems up, and they were great in their time, and now they're finding that things are changing so rapidly, we need to react quickly, like you said, so getting that business process information. It seems to me that one of the things in manufacturing you might be dealing with is it's kind of an imbalance between large amounts of data, like about maybe each unit that's manufactured or each thing that's sold on the shelves at Walmart. This is going to be vast numbers of millions and millions of rows of data that are coming through. But at the micro level, they're not that meaningful. So you have to be able to look at the gross metrics that these things are telling you, the trends they're telling you, and to be able to make useful decisions. And so I think the analytics are a really crucial part of that, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. So if you think about where all of this data is coming from, it's really coming from a breadth, so across a broad spectrum of companies, say across retailers, suppliers, logistics providers, partners, and it's also coming from depth. So even within a manufacturing enterprise, you're getting data at various levels. You're getting it at the enterprise level, you're getting it at the divisional level, you're getting it at the factory level. Within a factory, if you drill down deeper, you get into sensors, into operator terminals, into actuators and control systems. And so you also have data that's coming up through from the guts of the factory, from the plant floor, from really bottoms-up kind of data collection. And then you need to make sense of all this data that's flying at you from different directions, both breadth and from depth. And so you need to now start looking at putting systems closer to the edge, in terms of moving edge servers and tools and reports and business process that are closer to your sensors and your controllers and actuators, and also closer to the edge of your network in terms of making decisions closer to your organizational boundaries where you collaborate with your suppliers. And so that's where you can start thinking of putting business process and also analysis, because you need to start getting all these different data feeds that are coming in, and you need to filter them, and you need to aggregate them, and you need to make business sense out of them. So for example, if you have RFID sensors in your plant that are giving you data signals every 15 seconds, you need to take that information and then you need to package it into a form that may say that, hey, my inventory across this entire day dropped by X amount. And so that's where the aggregation and the transformation comes in.
Yeah, you know, like you were saying, the projections are crucial, because there's a lot of cost towards to building excess inventory, right? It's certainly something you don't want to do. And there's, on the other hand, a tremendous cost if your projections are wrong, and you know the plant can't operate at full capacity because the raw materials aren't there, then you know you've got bad news. It seems to me though that the really innovative manufacturers are going to be pursuing the kind of partnerships that are going to give them that updated information early on, which means they're going to need good, strong external connections to the retailers that they're working with.
Yes, and it'll be connections and integration, not just with the retailers, so that's upstream in the supply chain, but also downstream to where your suppliers and your partners are. And so it's for manufacturers like driving a car. You need to have rear view visibility into what's behind you, and that's where the analysis comes in, analytics and reporting. But you also need to have forward visibility into, for example, projecting your inventory out into forecasts, into trying to sense where your demand is, if it's moving up or moving down. And so tools like data mining and predictive analytics that are built into SQL Server 2005 help them with some of those forward-looking details. So, for example, a manufacturer can take their shipment history and run tools on it, an analysis, and come up with a prediction on where their sales will be going in the future in the next 2 to 3 or 4 months. And then based on this forward-looking projection, they can make changes to their production plans and their product mixes and the schedules to try to take advantage of whether demand is ramping up or it's ramping down. And this ties back to the example I quoted earlier, where AMR research showed that better forecasting leads to better results financially.
Okay, so this is all fascinating stuff, but I mean, to stay in touch with what's happening in this rapidly changing world, I mean, one of the things you do is you talk to a lot of Microsoft customers, sometimes in kind of these sessions where people come to our executive briefing center to kind of hear about what Microsoft's up to. You spend a lot of time talking to customers. What kind of things are you hearing from the customers?
Well, customers tell me today that they're having a problem in meeting the results that they need. So for them, they need technology to be a partner to the business. They need technology to be an enabler of change and not a barrier to change. We talked about some of the pressures that manufacturers are facing in terms of the business and the markets changing so rapidly. And quite often, IT just simply cannot keep up. I'm reminded of a conversation I had with a semiconductor manufacturer where they saw a business need for a new kind of product in the marketplace where they wanted to make these multi-chip modules where they essentially put more than one chip on a board and send it out. And so this was a new market for them, and they were very excited about this. And then, so the marketing folks came up with a business plan to support it. The engineering guys actually figured out how to change the facilities in the fabs to make it. But then IT took almost 2 years to get the internal systems aligned to the point where they could actually accept orders for these new kind of products and then do production planning for them. And so clearly, even though the market need was sensed and then the engineering changes were made, IT just, I mean, dropped the ball on that.
Ouch. That sounds painful. I would not want to be the IT guy who's answering for that one. But, you know, in many cases, it's in the critical path of bringing something new like that to market. And you can't move until those systems are in place.
Exactly. And so we need to enable systems and solutions for manufacturers that can respond faster to change and that align better to the needs of the stakeholders and that are adaptable when change occurs. And this is something that we call AAA, Aligned, Agile, and Adaptable. And this term is taken from an article that Professor Howley wrote in the HPR last year. But we feel that our platform and our technologies can enable those kind of AAA, Agile, Adaptable, and Aligned solutions that manufacturers need to compete effectively in the marketplace today.
So if I were an architect in the manufacturing space, you're gonna give me some resources that are there to help me. What kind of things will I see?
So what we will try to do is we'll try to provide you with reference architectures around different areas that you can take a look at and then you can leverage and then you can extend for your own solutions. And these reference architectures are going to be in the areas of supply chain management, in the idea, in the areas of collaborative product development and new product introduction, in the areas of customers relationship management, how to manage customers, and in the areas of plant floor operations. And so within these broad areas, we're going to try to provide you with more focused, more detailed architectural guidance that will help you come up with solutions. Now, this is targeted for architects and solutions architects and customers or end users. So, for example, the IT organization of a manufacturer, but also to ISVs, so architects who are building software solutions to resell to these manufacturers. And what we'll try to do is help you come up with a way to externalize your business logic and your workflows and your rules to the point where end users can personalize them and customize them, and where we enable plug and play in the enterprise. So we can take solutions from different providers and match them up to what the business needs are in a seamless fashion.
Yeah, I think that's crucial, right? I mean, if you look at all of the trends that are happening, even in sort of the what people are calling Web 2.0, which most people think of kind of as a consumer thing. But really, it's the idea of putting the users in charge, right? Empowering the users instead of saying, well, no, you can't have that report that you need because it will take IT, you know, 6 months to get to that. We give them the ability to do more of the work they need to and with easier tools and that sort of thing. Because I can imagine this probably happens hundreds of times a day where somebody in one of these manufacturing plants gets a call from a retailer who's asking them for an even better price than they had before, something, you know, lower, and or to promise something bigger. And they're asking the question, can we do that? Can we deliver? Could we do those things and still make money? And they can't just say, well, why don't you wait? Get back to me in 3 months when our IT department has had a chance to crunch these numbers and give me the answer, because the retailer will go somewhere else by then.
So let's take this scenario and kind of try to understand how our architectures and solutions can support this kind of case. So the retailer would have sent a forecast of what they expected to sell earlier, so maybe at the beginning of the selling season. And so at that point, there would have been an exchange of spreadsheets and an exchange of data. And we have a variety of tools to enable that, such as Windows Communication Foundation and tools like that, and then BizTalk to process those. But once those plans have been set up, we now have scenarios where the reality of day-to-day realities creep in, and then plans go out of date. And then you have to deal with exceptions and alerts and events. And so we have tools such as BizTalk to capture those events and alerts. And now some of the newer technologies like Office 12 will allow you to actually create complex models in Excel to kind of model the kind of scenarios that you're dealing with. So suppose you're a product line manager who has to make this decision. So should we take this new demands or this new request from my retail customer? I can see quickly by in my models in Excel whether I should, in fact, increase my forecasts to meet increased demand, whether I need to sacrifice margin for that because my costs from my suppliers may go up because it's now outside the bound that we'd agreed on as part of the forecasting process. And now, if I do have to sacrifice margin on my increased levels of service, are they worth it? And so all of these kind of trade-offs could be modeled in Excel. And Excel services in Office 12 has a much richer computation engine that can handle these kind of complicated models. And then it also provides a way to standardize models across the company, and so there'd be a single system of the truth that can be used to store spreadsheets across the company. And then once those decisions have been made, we have the workflow tools that are built into Office 12 where some of the business rules that take that make some of the decision-making processes easier can be stored. So, for example, let's say the retailer asks for a 3% increase in supply. You might have a rule or a workflow that says, you know, 3% is okay. That's within my flex limits and I can handle that. But then let's suppose it's instead of 3%, they ask for 10%. You may say, well, let me see. Depending on my margin and my inventory availability, I may or may not choose to accept that request. And then you can then surface the business rules that are in these workflows to business analysts and to end users so that they can actually modify these rules without having to recode the entire application.
Well, that's a fascinating look into where this is all going, and I think I couldn't help but think about when you were talking about the demand, the retailers demanding more. I couldn't help but think about the Xbox 360 that I'm still waiting to get one because the retailers don't have one on their store shelves. And I read in the press that this was a supply chain problem, that they couldn't get enough of the components they needed to build. But hey, that's the way the world works, right?
Well, I think you're right. I think the best technologies in the world can help alleviate problems, but when you're faced with a shortage of actual physical material, there's not much you can manufacture.
That's why I like dealing in software. It's all just electrons, right? We have an infinite supply. We can make any amount that we need to. And anyway, well, Anu, thanks so much for joining me today and explaining the world of manufacturing. And we're looking forward to seeing the great stuff that you come out with.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
Atanu Banerjee, ladies and gentlemen, with the manufacturing story. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's working in manufacturing who's thinking, I've got to talk to this guy. He's got some answers to problems I'm trying to solve today. In fact, I just saw an email from Atanu where he was down in Mexico City showing off some of his thinking, and people were loving it. Speaking of trips, hey, I'm on my way to Israel next week, where I will be recording a bunch of our casts at TechEd Israel, and popping on over to Cairo, where I'll be making some videos and just having a great time meeting people. I'm coming your way, too, soon. I'm telling you, it's going to happen when ArtCast comes to town.